I feel very formal standing up here with a microphone. I think the reason I'm here is because Tom and I had a chat on the phone, because people know that I've worked in the renewable energy industry for quite a long time, for about 12 years, and I've been involved in quite a lot of community energy projects and commercial ones. And there was an idea going around that we should have a community solar farm for Carn. And actually, this is an idea that the town council had a few years ago as well, when they had some funding to develop something called a local development order for Carn, which I sat on the steering group for that, and we met sort of weekly, monthly or thereabouts, and made quite a lot of progress, did quite a lot of research in the town, finding out what people's attitudes were, and then the government decided they were going to withdraw subsidies for solar in 2016, and so that was no longer going to be a viable option. The good news now is that solar in the right place is now viable without subsidies, so increasingly it is becoming something that people can look at as a community project. Anyway, so if we could have the next slide, please, Stan. So what is a community solar farm? Well, I'm sure you all know what it is, but just to be absolutely clear, it is an energy generating asset. You can have community wind farms as well, and so on, and community hydro. It's an energy generating asset that is either owned by the community or the community has a substantial investment in it, either through shares or bonds or withdrawable shares, so on. And there are a lot of different ways of bringing a community solar farm into being. This picture, you can't really see the solar panels in this slide, but this is actually a community solar farm called Southill in Oxfordshire. And that was a project that was developed, and they have a very good active community group in Southill that have been doing community energy work for many years. A lot of knowledgeable sort of retired professor type people, lots of money in that part of the world. It's David Cameron's constituency, and so lots of people willing to put time and effort into it. They developed quite a large solar farm, of 5 megawatts large by the standards in those days, from scratch. So that's the way you start. So that means you go out, you find a piece of land, you get planning permission, and then you go through the whole process. But you don't have. But that's the riskiest way of doing it. But it's also the way that you can make the most money out of it as well. Then there are other community groups who decide that they want to let someone else take the risk of the development, and they will buy the solar farm after it's got planning permission, but they will take care of getting it built and so on, and then go on to run it after that. So that's slightly that's lower risk, but it's still risky because things go wrong when you're trying to build something. But that's another way of doing a solar project. Then you can take the easier option, which is to wait, let someone else take the risk of building it, and then buy the project as a complete project and own it and operate it as a community. Quite a lot of projects decide to go down that route. Then there's another way of doing it, and there's a group I'm working with at the moment called Next Generation, who have been, they've got £40 million worth of lottery money. Well, not just lottery money, but some of it's lottery money, which they've used to buy 7 operational solar farms in England, which they're planning to bring into community ownership. So these are all over the country. They are then working with local community groups who will buy the projects from them once they've held their share offers and raised the investment from the community. And we're looking at raising investments of about £3-4 million. So it's quite a big undertaking. So, the final one, actually, sorry, can we go back? which I think is a really good option, particularly for a group that's not necessarily very experienced in doing something like this, is to look for a shared ownership opportunity with a developer. Let them do all the work, they'll, you know, take care of everything, and then when once the solar farm is operational, you can get involved as a part owner or part investor and get the, you know, say 20%, 30%, however much you want to do. I'm working on wind farm projects in Scotland at the moment, where some of them are going to be up to 49% of the wind farm is going to be made available to the local community. Working, you know, with big developers like Scottish and Southern Energy, all the community has to do is be organised, raise the money, put the money in, and then they get the money comes back out and can get reinvested locally, and they don't have to worry about what happens if the project goes wrong. They let the commercial business deal with all that side of things. So that's a really attractive option, not being done so much in England at the moment, but it's something that the government was looking at doing with solar about 4 or 5 years ago before the whole, they abolished the subsidies and the whole thing went, you know, badly wrong. So what do you need for a solar farm? The one in that picture, does anyone recognise that? Anyone been up to the High Pen solar farm? Yep, that's right near where I live. And this fits all these criteria. Access to a grid connection, so there's the substation on London Road, Oxford Road, sorry, and it's well screened. If you didn't know that was there, you can't really see it from anywhere in Carn, unless you actually walk up there. It's not in an area of outstanding natural beauty or a national park or whatever, which doesn't make it impossible to put solar farms there, but it's a lot harder because there are much stricter planning restrictions there. If it's going to be a community project, well, it stands to reason it's got to be supported by the local community. Now, we all think renewable energy is a wonderful idea, but there are a few people out there who are not so enthusiastic about it as we are. You know, if you're going to call it a community project, you've really got to be sure that the community wants to get on board with it as well. You need about 25 acres for a 5-megawatt site, and that will generate enough electricity to supply the equivalent of about 1,500 homes and save about 2,000 tonnes of carbon. The High Pen one is about, I think it's 10 megawatts, so it's twice as big as that. What you're seeing, what the government did initially before they pulled the rug out completely from solar in 2016, they said, right, well, we're going to limit them to 5 megawatts because we'll let people build small ones, but we don't want anything bigger than that. So you've got quite a lot of small ones dotted around the country. Now solar is starting to come back and people want to do it subsidy-free. Developers actually find that they can only make it pay if they build really big solar farms. So we're looking at, you know, 50 megawatts is the maximum you can build without it having to get approved by national government, go through infrastructure planning process. I'm sure you all know there's quite a lot in Wiltshire. there's one at Lynham, which is actually somehow managed magically, perhaps because it's on land owned by the MOD, to subvert that limit of being 50 megawatts and is over 60 megawatts, and that without having to go through that rigorous planning process that others would have to go through. There's also a big 50-60 megawatt project on Rorton Airfield, which you can see from the Ridgeway. Those are some of the bigger ones that you may have seen around, but there's lots of small ones dotted around because Wiltshire's a really, really good place to do solar. We've got lots of sunshine and we've got not too much protected landscape, some, but not too much, and we used to have quite good access to the grid. So can we have the next slide, please, Stan? Now, really the key to having a solar farm is your grid connection, because if you haven't got a convenient grid connection that's going to be economic to connect the solar farm, you can't make the solar farm profitable. This is a map that is very easy. I downloaded it, very easy to find on the internet. Our distribution network operator is SSE, Scottish and Southern Electricity, and this shows you exactly where there's grid capacity in Wiltshire and where the grid is constrained. And if you can read it, I've tried to put Carn in the middle of the map, and that red dot means we haven't got any grid capacity. That refers to, that's the substation on Oxford Road. So it doesn't really look like a large solar farm is going to be viable in this area, certainly not until the network has been upgraded and the capacity has improved. So it's a shame, but there's been talk about getting feasibility studies done and so on, and the first thing anyone doing a feasibility study, anyone professional is going to do, is going to look at that map and they're going to say, it's just not viable, which is a shame for a big solar farm, but that doesn't mean there aren't other ways of delivering community energy in the local area. And actually, I think there is some grid available, but someone else has already bought it. So that means that there is probably a commercial developer who is looking to do a project in the area. And if and when it comes to light, which it surely will, because they'll have to put a planning application in, then that would be an opportunity for the Carn group to approach them and say, we hear you want to do a solar farm in the area, we'd like to be involved, what are you doing for the community? So this is from the Community Energy England report that they brought out last year. It makes it all look a bit better than it is, because last year was really the worst year for community energy in a really long time. But if you can see that 168 megawatts, that's quite a lot of community-owned energy, but it's not nearly as much as you get from big projects. But it's interesting to see what other people are doing. So they're doing low-carbon transport, local energy efficiency, energy storage, batteries. That's really exciting. That wasn't around even 3-4 years ago, and that's something that community groups can get involved in. So if we can have the next slide, please. Can you read the bottom there? So these are the motivations that groups have for getting involved in community energy. And first and foremost, it's about tackling climate change. But there are lots of other benefits that it can bring locally. And the primary one after tackling climate change is generating an income that can be reinvested locally. And you can use the money for example, dealing with fuel poverty, investing in other energy-generating projects, etc. Raising awareness, if you're going to have a community energy project locally, it's a great way of getting other people engaged in the conversation about climate change and doing something positive that makes a real difference. Reducing energy bills and tackling fuel poverty are sort of the same thing. I'm sure that, I don't know what the numbers are for fuel poverty in the Carn area or in the Wiltshire area, but we've got quite a lot of old housing stock, so I would imagine that it's quite high. Supporting community services, improving energy services, and community empowerment. I don't know why that's so small, because I think doing any kind of community project should feel really empowering. But I guess those are the answers that they got to the questions. So what other things that could you do in the community energy space? Well, do any of you know the guys at Zero Chippenham? So they've got a great scheme going at the moment. It's a domestic solar panels on roofs scheme. They have identified two local installers who they've kind of tested them out, they know that they're good, and they are offering discounts of up to 20% of getting solar panels installed on your rooftop. You don't have to live in Chippenham to participate, you can do it if you live in Carn. And so far I think they've had about 30 inquiries since it was launched a few months ago, and the first installation is going up very soon, I'm told. So obviously the advantage of that is it's a quite, if you're thinking about putting solar panels on your house at home, it's quite a quick and easy way of doing it because you, it cuts out a lot of the legwork. It's a big investment and you wouldn't normally, you know, do it to the first person who came along. You'd want to get several recommendations from other people. Well, Zero Chippenham have already done that work for you, so it makes it easy. Then if we can have the next slide, please. So these are all some other fairly local things that are going on. Salisbury Community Energy is working to put solar panels on roofs of schools. And again, they've done a share offer to raise the funds for that. And so that's another thing to look at, is putting solar panels on community assets. I don't know, I mean, that, hopefully that's something that the town council is looking at doing anyway, but if they need help from the community to do it, then it's a good thing to get involved with. In Bristol, in Lockleys, they're raising money to put solar panels on, I think, 300 different properties in social housing, and then the people who live in them get a 30% discount on their electricity bills. The reason I like this picture, it's not anywhere in the UK actually, but I like the idea of solar panels charging electric cars. And NADA Community Energy, which is near Salisbury, is setting up a electric vehicle car club, so where people can, you know, subscribe and share an electric car, so it helps to take cars off the road. They got funding for that from the Next Generation project, which is the same project that is bringing the seven existing solar farms into community ownership. And then climate-friendly Bradford-on-Avon is a really good and really active community group. They do a lot of work with fuel poverty. They have a heat camera that goes around people's houses seeing where heat is leaking and making recommendations to people for how they can make their houses energy efficient. So obviously using less energy is where we really all need to be starting, rather than just using greener energy. So I just thought I'd give you some examples of other ideas that you might think of, because I know there might be some disappointment that it doesn't really look like a big solar farm is going to be getting going in Cairn anytime in the next few years, maybe in slightly further ahead, but there are lots of other things that you can do. And happy to take any questions.
Can I ask a question about solar panels on an industrial estate? One of the things we thought about when this group was set up was there's quite a big industrial estate here in Cairn. If you go and have a look at it, there's not a solar panel in sight. So this is a different kind of tactic here. This is, how do you persuade local businesses on a whole of an industrial estate to have solar power or even a wind generator? Because other parts of the country, that is done when you set up a new industrial estate. Often there is a wind generator. But I wonder what you thought about. How do you go about doing that? Have you got any experience? And how would you sell it? That's the they would do it. We want them to stop using all that energy here in Cairn.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. There are quite often a lot of issues with putting solar panels on commercial buildings, because sometimes they're under lease hold rather than, you know, complicated arrangements with tenants and landlords and so on. The building's got to, the roof's got to face the right direction, it might not be strong enough, etc., etc. But those are all sort of fairly poor excuses. I was involved in a project near Aldermaston a few years ago called Caliva Community Energy, and that's exactly what they did. The community raised money to put solar panels on the roofs of, it was a, what do you call it, not an industrial estate, but businesses. Yeah, it's a business park. It was a business park, exactly. So it can be done, you know, it's a good place to start. And I think on Port Marsh there's a gas peaking plant, so that's not a very green form of electricity generation. So, I think someone needs to just go and talk to the building owners and maybe get someone out there to do some surveys to see, you know, what's viable.
So just to build on that one, so we're doing a bit of a paper exercise in terms of looking at the available kind of rooftop space that's up in Port Marsh, just on a kind of very analytical type level, and then see how much potential that has. And then that gives you a bit of a kind of stimulus to then go in and have conversations with some of the business leads and things like that. The other interesting one as well, I mean, De Koning probably one of the largest groups up there, and we're trying to get in touch with the UK and Ireland MD who works out of Calne to see if we could get somebody like De Koning on board, then actually that might start a sort of domino effect with some of the smaller businesses as well. And they do a lot in the kind of sustainability space anyway, that they publicise quite a lot. So if you can get somebody like that moving forward, then that would be a great kind of catalyst for doing other stuff on Port Marsh as well. I had a quick question as well. So when you were talking about the solar projects, you mentioned the kind of upper limit of capacity, but I think there was formerly a 5 megawatt limit for community projects. Is that still the case, or has that been taken away now?
So the reason for the 5 megawatt limit is the subsidy was limited to 5 megawatts. So that's basically how the government did it. They didn't say you can't build a project that is bigger than 5 megawatts. They said you can only get a subsidy for 5 megawatts. And you've got a situation because we used to call it the solar coaster, because the subsidies changed on the 1st of March every year, and everyone would get absolutely mad trying to get everything finished by, you know, the 28th of February. And because if you were even a day late, you might not get your subsidy. And then they kept on changing the rules, and you had developers who had projects in the pipeline that were bigger than 5 megawatts, say 10 megawatts, and then they had to sort of market them as half community project and half commercial project. So there are a few projects around where you've got a community solar farm next to a commercial solar farm. So that's where the 5 megawatt thing comes from. But now there are no subsidies, then it can be as big as you want. And I'm just been working on a project in Devon, which is going to be the first subsidy-free community solar project since the rules changed. And that's going to be, well, it's not massive, but it's 7.5 megawatts.
You did touch on battery storage, I think, but I sort of become aware from my own solar panels, because we have some on our garage roof, just how cyclical and intermittent solar power is, really. I mean, even just the sun goes out, and also in December and January, the day is not very long, and the sun is very low. So I wondered how viable large solar panel power is, or what, if you had a view on that, or whether whether batteries are the future or what, how to overcome that problem.
Yeah, well, I think batteries are absolutely the game changer, because this has been one of the the reasons people have always used to counter any form of renewable energy, which is, what do you do when the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing? And they talk about it being intermittent, and I don't like to use the word intermittent. I just say it's variable, but usually it's blowing somewhere. You know, the wind is blowing somewhere, or the sun is shining somewhere. Do you have batteries on with your solar panels at home? No, but. Yeah. Yeah, well, all commercial developers now are putting batteries with their solar farms. So it is absolutely going to make quite a big difference. Yeah. And batteries are also an advantage in other, not just with renewables, because they can help to even out, peaks in demand. So wherever your electricity has come from, if you've got an abundance of it, and it's the price varies during the day, you can load up your battery when it's cheap, and then when the price is higher in the evening, when everyone comes home and puts the kettles on after work, you can release the battery into the grid. It's called grid balancing services, and it's a way of making money. Now, the technology for batteries is getting very good, but people are still finding it a little bit difficult to find a way of making money out of buying and selling the energy from it. So it's not quite there yet, but it will be very soon.
I now have an electric car as well. I mean, people have muted the possibility of using the car, the battery in your car, to smooth out your load. I mean, I can see complications with that, but I do have a big battery sitting on the drive, but I can't use it the way I would like to.
Well, that's absolutely right. That's called vehicle to grid. And I've got an electric car too, but I don't have any solar panels. But that's what I'd like to do next. But yes, so you're absolutely right. In the future, when everyone's driving electric cars, we'll be using them to help balance the grid and release power into people's homes when they need it. And if you think what you can do with a smartphone now, you know, it's not that difficult to make everyone's cars help with all the grid balancing that we need.
Sorry, I had another question. You mentioned the first non-subsidy solar farm that you've been working on recently. Community solar farm, yeah. So in terms of the returns from a shareholder perspective and sort of the funds that then feed back into community energy projects, is that still competitive with kind of what it was like when the feed-in tariff was in place and everything else?
That's a really good question, and the answer is probably no. So two of the community solar projects I worked on were just outside Swindon. I think they were in 2015, 2016. Did any of you invest in those? They offered an interest rate, a return of 6%. And Swindon Council invested quite a lot of money in them, as well as, you know, ordinary people. But that was because it was supported by the subsidy. Now, we haven't really tested the market yet, so we don't really know what it's going to be. My view is that people are unlikely to want to invest anything for less than about 4.5-5% return for something that they perceive to be quite risky, even though I don't think it is that high a risk. And certainly the amount of money coming back into the community would be less, but it would still be... It's still good. It's still worth having. Absolutely, yeah.
I'll carry on. All the models that you mentioned of community energy, which one would you think is best for a town the size of Calne with the sort of buildings we have? Tricky one.
I don't know. All of them. I love the idea of an electric vehicle car club, but that's because I'm an EV driver and I think everyone should have access to them. And I think it's, you know, you can build a solar canopy there to charge them, and everyone can share them. And, you know, I don't know if that's particularly appropriate for Calne, but we tend to use our cars quite a lot here, I think. And that's the one I like. But I certainly think that every roof in Calne should have solar panels on it. Every roof that is suitable should.
So, Sophie, can I have a question?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, that was interesting, that diagram. It looks like that must be in Spain or somewhere near the equator, because the pitch on the roof is very flat.
Yeah.
I looked at our town hall last week with a compass, and of course, unfortunately, it's not very good because it's mostly north-south rather than, you know, east-west and so on.
Well, south-facing is good.
South-facing is good, but it's not it's not south-facing, sorry. It's east-west facing.
You can put them east-west.
You can, on both sides, but you've got to put...
Yes, you put them both sides.
You've got to put two arrays on then, of course, when we were in Wales, we spent a lot of money on solar panels and battery backup. That was back in 2007-08. Batteries were expensive then, and but it did make a difference because the idea was in those days that you made sure you did your washing machine in the day when the sun was shining
to
capitalise on it.
Yeah.
But we did manage to store some as well that was lost. But then the tariffs were brilliant, so we were actually it was worthwhile doing. It's still worthwhile doing because the costs of everything's come down now.
Yeah.
But you just don't get the feed-in.
Benefits. That's true. Yeah.
Have you done any work on energy from water, like rivers? Because I've got a river running through our garden. It's fairly swift flowing, and just beyond the garden, there was a mill building where there would have been a big water wheel. I found a German company online who said that they've got a small contraption that goes in the river and that can power something like 15 houses because the current is always going. I was tempted to go through and have a look at it. The company didn't get back to me. I think they're ever so busy, they're doing well. But to be brutally honest, I was worried about A, planning permission and then getting agreement with the river authority. Could that be something, we've got rivers going through Cowan, is that so? For me, it would be better if someone else, you know, if it was done on a big scale and then I could join in with it. Is that anything that you've come across before?
Definitely, yeah. So community hydro schemes, there's quite a few around. There's one in Oxford that I know of. There's a big one that was quite controversial on the River Thames, I think. But it's definitely something that other community groups have done. I don't know a great deal about the technology and what the what's it called, the river, the height,
the drop.
Yeah. How much you need for it to actually work? But I'm sure there are people out there who will tell you. But it's quite a lot of community groups do get involved in hydro schemes. And if you look at the Community Energy England website, they probably have quite a lot of examples on there. Hi, Tom.
Sorry, I'm late.
No, okay, anyone else?
I attended the budget presentation by Wiltshire Council a couple of weeks ago, and there were quite a lot of questions from the audience about climate change. And they said that they're planning to put a canopy like that on their park and ride, which I assume must be in Salisbury.
Salisbury,
I'm not aware of any others in the county. They didn't say to power, you know, for electric vehicle charging, but just as solar panels to get energy, which is a move in the right direction anyway. I was quite pleased to hear that. The guy who heads it up is somebody called Richard Kluwer, who's one of the senior people there, who spoke very well, actually. And he explained to us why wind power is pretty much off the table, really, in Wiltshire, because of the lay of the land, because of the military, because of areas of natural beauty, and so on. He said there's one corner up, I think, in the northwest or something, where it might be possible, but over most of Wiltshire, it's a non-starter. Mm-hmm. But, that was good. I wanted to ask you a second question. You know, I'm on the town council, and we've been struggling, or the council, as the office has been struggling, to try and get some electric vehicle charging, public ones, in the town. Because we don't own very much land. Wiltshire tend to own, or they're commercially owned, like the Sainsbury's car parks and things. We still haven't got any, despite people contacting the council and pressing the case, and besides some of us also speaking up at meetings. But have you any suggestions about how we could try? You know, it seems to me, you go around Wiltshire and every other town seems to have some. I'm not quite sure how they got them, who funded them? Sometimes they are on the sites of supermarkets and things, but or even garages, but we have none in Carl.
Yeah, well, Wiltshire Council put some in a while ago, but the ones that they put it, there's a couple in Marlborough, but then they go wrong and they never fix them,
is that right?
Which is really annoying. If you can identify the space where they can go in the town, if there are any suitable spaces, that there are lots of commercial companies now who will come and put them in. There's a company called GridServe. There's a fund from the High Pen Solar Farm which should be used for spending money on things like that. I don't know if the money's all been spent yet, but I think that's all comes under Carn without parish council's control. Right. But I would have, there are lots of commercial installers who I'm sure would put them in for nothing if you find the space for them.
Yeah. The main obstacle so far has been the spaces we've identified are quite away from the power source.
Yeah.
And the cabling is incredibly expensive.
Yes. You know,
they're talking about £15,000 connection charge or something from the electricity
supply. Right, yeah.
Which, of course, makes it's out of proportion, really, to provide two or four spaces.
You could put some solar canopies on the car parks.
We could do.
That's a thought. And also, they can connect into lampposts
now.
That's
what I was going to ask you, yeah. I know in London they're doing that.
Yes, I've seen that, yeah.
Westminster at Wandsworth and other places, I think. Is that practical here? Is that, you know, from an ordinary lamppost, is it?
Well, I'm not a technical expert, but a lamppost has an electricity supply.
Yes. I'm with you so far, go on.
And if it works in London, I don't see why it wouldn't work here. But the way we have parking in Carn when I come in, you know, I park in usually in Sainsbury's car park. I know there's a few other car parks, rather than, you know, by the side of the road. So I'm not sure, you know, I mean, you need someone to do a sort of audit, I suppose, of the town and see where they would go.
Well, you know, I suggested to them Church Street, which has some car parking spaces. There's also a bit on the A4 as you drop down into Carn, coming from Chippenham.
Yeah.
It's a few spaces. It needs to be fairly central so the visitors to the town can use it, because it's not the locals, because you charge yours at home, I'm sure.
Well,
if you live in Carn, you don't need it. It's for others, isn't it? People passing through.
Yeah. Well, not everyone who lives in Carn has off-street parking either.
No, they don't. No,
but
that's true.
And you also need a bit of a strategy for it. And as you know, you've driven an electric vehicle. You need some slow chargers for people who are going to be staying overnight.
Right.
You need rapid chargers for people who are just in a hurry and need to get a top up and then get on the way in half an hour's time. And you need something in the middle, you know, for people who might be coming into town for a couple of hours of business and just want to charge, you know, see a film, but we don't have a cinema in Carn, but you know.
And the problem with lamppost ones is that they're really the fast chargers, not the rapid chargers, because you're not going to get 22 kilowatts out of a lamppost. So for people that are parking along overnight, that's great.
They're ideal for residential.
For the real fast chargers, you need to put in the power.
Mm.
That's the difficulty. We discussed this. I did a presentation at the town council about that. It's getting enough power in the right places. But lampposts are great for overnight stuff. Lampposts happen to be outside your house as well, or at least people parked outside of the parking restriction zones. But for rapid charging, lampposts are not going to deliver enough power.
But I wonder if there's anywhere in Port Marsh where you could do it, because, you know, that's quite near main roads and so on. And you would think that they would have quite a lot of power, and the Oxford Road substation is not far away.
That's a good point.
I was just going to say, we were chatting with Nick Murray over at Zero Chippenham last week or the week before, I think, and they said they'd just commissioned or about to commission a couple of studies to look at the optimum points for EV charging across Chippenham using a couple of companies, I think it was. So I wonder whether there's the opportunity to do something like that for Calne as well and work out where's the optimum places for charging, where's the kind of power source is going to come from, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing as well is my colleague is the chief technology officer for BP Chargemaster, which puts in kind of charging points. So I was going to see whether she can put in a good word for us and maybe prioritise something for Calne. But we'll see what happens on that.
Brilliant.
One.
Brilliant, yeah.
Can I just ask you about the charging points at supermarkets? Because here in Calne we've got several, but none have got charging points. In Warminster, where I sometimes go there, they've just put one in at the Asda supermarket. So do you know from your experience, how is it that this is happening in Warminster and it ain't happening in Calne? What have we got to do to persuade those...
Yeah, I don't know. Right to the supermarkets. You know, I'm pretty sure there's one in the Sainsbury's in Wootton Bassett, but there isn't one in the Sainsbury's in Calne, obviously. And I've Tesco's, you know, loads of room for chargers. But right to the supermarkets, put pressure on them.
I suppose I'm asking the question of the town council. I mean, when Tesco's came, which is quite recent, why wasn't that part of the application?
I think the town council was slow to bring it up and Tesco hadn't thought of it either. And by the time we approached them, they'd already got the sort of infrastructure in. So, you know, it's fault on both sides. But in a way, it's about public awareness. You know, 3-4 years ago, it wasn't in the front of people's minds. Yeah.
Exactly. Now more people buying electric cars than
anything
else.
If Tesco was being built today, I'm pretty sure they would have put some in. But we just missed it. Yeah. Mm.
Right, guys, something we can take an action on. To sort of write to the supermarket campaign, going to see, as with that generally the supermarkets have to pay for the installation. I'm just wondering what they're...
Oh, but yeah, but the company like Tesco's?
Yeah, exactly.
It'll bring, you know, they've got a petrol station there that undercuts every other petrol station in Wiltshire.
Town. Yeah.
I never have to put petrol in my car, but I look at the prices every time I go because I'm always amazed. It's always 10p more expensive in Wootton Bassett than it is in Calne because you know Tesco's is keeping the prices low. So they know that and the reason they do that is because it brings people into their stores. Now, when everyone else is driving EVs, if they've got EV chargers there, you know it seems to me like a no-brainer commercial decision for them. So what you know. Ask them, find out what they've got to say.
Right, who's taking that action? Me? Okay. Cool.
Yes.
Perhaps we should all.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, I think we should all write.
I think everyone should, yes. Yeah. Everyone should write to them.
Everyone take an action to write to Tesco and say, where's your electric chargers?
I think you should also think Sainsbury's and the Co-op. Because for Calne Town, you want to bring people into the town, not just to the periphery. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did we talk already about the solar farm project in Calne and where we are with that? That's all been covered.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I missed that. Good. Anyone got any other questions for Sophie?
I just want to ask you about the scores because I wasn't aware of this Salisbury initiative, which is in my own county.
Yeah.
So I'm very pleased that you've came tonight and have enlightened on these things. So just talking about the schools here in Caen, the primary schools, and we've got one secondary school. How do we go about doing that? I mean, these are all questions that I don't know the answers. You do, I think. How do we go about getting solar panels on those schools in Caen? Where do we start? How do we do it?
There used to be a fantastic thing. There's a campaign group called Possible that used to be called 1010. They had a fantastic campaign a few years ago called Solar Schools, which made it really easy for everybody because all the school had to do was sign up. They'd come and see if it was suitable for solar panels, and then they'd set up a brilliant website, and you could basically buy a part of a panel on the roof of the school and pledge anything from £5 upwards, and get all the parents involved. But it, like organising any sort of community project, you would start with the school, ask them if they want. Well, I guess they're controlled by Wiltshire Council too. But if you can raise the funds to do it through a community crowdfunding campaign or a community share offer, there ought to be enough of a return on it to make it viable, because there is now the smart export guarantee, and it's just about getting lots of people involved, putting in the money to make it happen. We'll talk to the people in Salisbury about how they're doing it.
So I was just going to say, again, we were in touch with Nick Murray in Zero Chippenham, and they've kicked off a regional development fund application, which, although it focuses in on Chippenham, also encompasses surrounding areas. And I think the more opportunities they put into that application, the better chance it stands of getting through. So assuming they get through their next stage of application, which I think is due back in a week or so, if not already, they'll be then keen to sort of look at what we can do in Caen.
Yeah.
And secondary and primary schools. And sort of building on that, we've also kicked off a conversation with Kingsbury Green to start with, not just to kind of think about solar, although they're doing some of the calculations and giving us some numbers and all that kind of stuff, but also to get the students involved as well, potentially. So I'm there on the 9th of March giving a talk about climate change and technology and things like that, and hopefully to get them involved in stuff as well.
And actually, I went to the Chippenham Area Board meeting earlier this week because they had a eco workshop, and they were doling out the cash like nobody's business. I mean, they gave £3,000 to the Rifle Club for something. So that will put a few panels on a school. I think there's money there if you know where to find it.
Yeah. Just on that. So, Zero Chippenham, we are partners. We Caen Against Climate Change signed up to that application. So we're already identified in that, which is good.
Yeah, no, they're doing great work, Zero Chippenham, and Nick Murray is really switched on.
Done? Great, thank you, Sophie.
Yeah, thank you, Sophie. Yeah.